Hey guys, on this episode of EdTech, we're going to have Gina Sansevero and Jason Taylor. We're going to be talking about globalized integrators, AV, how this responds to educational bids, as well as the new features of Dante, all this and more on EdTech.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is EdTech, episode 76, Globalization, AV, and Education.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Atlas IED, innovative audio solutions for every business environment.
This is EdTech, the monthly higher ed tech podcast. This month, I am joined by Gina Sansevero from Atlas IED. How are you, Gina?
I'm doing very well, Bill. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, not a problem. And as well from Drexel, we have Jason Taylor. How are you, sir?
I'm fairly well. The air conditioning seems to not be working so well today in the building, but I'll get through it.
There you have it, folks. We're already on a timer. The moment the sun goes up, we're going to start turning into a convection oven for him. first and foremost, it is almost, for us, it is, as I put it, it's the summer's almost coming to an end. And if you're in education, this honestly feels like the Sunday before the school week starts and everything. So for a lot of us, we're probably wrapping up projects. Or if you're like me, who is currently in the midst of trying to get a dorm finished. So that's always fun times. In any event, the first quick thing I'll ask, at least with Jason, with you guys, are you guys, how are the projects wrapping up with you guys at Drexel right now?
Okay. We're still kind of slow going on bigger projects. And I think that I've convinced people that the big, big project mm-hmm. is not going to happen until winter. So that's mm-hmm. sort of a step back hurdle, I guess. I don't know mm-hmm. how you...
Okay.
Does any classrooms?
Classrooms are a lot of the smaller classrooms we do in-house, so that's not really an issue. This particular project is a very large forward-facing lecture hall that also has significant lighting issues, and so I'm actually in a weird position where I'm the AV guy, but I'm more advocating for the lighting situation and letting other people take care of the AV side of it because I'm more concerned about the lighting.
Now, here's the other question I have for you on this one. And that is, as you're saying, like letting other folks take care of it, would this be more of contract this out to another company or would this be one of those just, well, eventually we'll get to it kind of thing?
Well, I guess it's a little bit of both of those because here we have like my AV domain is classrooms, general use classrooms. And then there's event services and they're, you know, they'll use that room as well for large events. So they get their say. And then Rob's group, VCAP, also will use the room for video conferencing and, you know, recording, you know, big lectures and stuff. So they have their say. So I kind of let those two groups battle it out on the AV side because really when it comes down to it, all I need is a place to plug in a laptop and, you know, to get it up on the projector and a functional microphone. Mm-hmm. So all of the bells and whistles don't really concern me.
So the reason I asked that, and this actually gets into our first article of the day, which comes to us via Commercial Integrator, and which it talks about the global demand for AV. Now, how this relates back to everything with this one is when it comes to contracting out or, you know, doing stuff out of house, because, you know, there's been multiple talks on this podcast about whether or not you do stuff in-house or whether you do it out of, you know, contracted out and everything. There is this turn in which, you know, if you haven't seen it and everything, you now have two of the, we're starting to get more of the larger AV companies all kind of merging together. If you haven't been around, AVI, SPL, and Diversified have kind of become the two local, you know, kind of behemoths in the realm. And the thing is, and I've kind of noticed this, when we go to bid out certain projects and everything, in our case, it was we did a renovations on two buildings, and it was about 24 classrooms, which, you know, in the time given and everything, would take us forever. So we contracted it out, and you laugh, but it's one of those, yeah, there are certain things.
Oh, no, where, I know. I feel your pain.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, in this case, it's, you know, could we do it ourselves? Yes. Do I have my electrician's A card? Not a chance. Right. So, so when we go to contract these things out, it is kind of interesting to note who responds, how they respond, and who specifically bids on it. For us, it's been a number of local competitors, local integrators, and then every now and then, you know, we get one or two from either Diversified or AVI SPL, which I found out an interesting thing. It's almost like they're almost like a, more like a McDonald's franchise, in that, you know, there's the AVI SPL office that's in New York, and then there's the AVI SPL office in Philly. And only once did I ever see that, like, you know, all of a sudden I got two bids from AVI SPL, and I went, and I'm like, oh, it's two different offices. All right, this one makes sense.
And two different prices.
Yes.
Interesting.
To make life easier on both of them, not all of them had all their legality paperwork filled out. So it was one of those just, ooh, A for effort. Not so much. Once again, the folks, you know, mean very well, and they try very hard and everything else. So I'm not gonna say, like, you know, they didn't, like, you know, follow through. It was just state contract paperwork can be a pain, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So, Jason, on your side, how do you guys tend to view it? Do you see, you know, more regional integrators? Do you see the mom and pop shops? And, you know, kind of going from there, like, you know, who tends to be, you know, how do you factor it all out?
We definitely see both smaller companies and you know, larger, you know, global type companies. In my experience, the local companies are more hungry. They tend to respond faster. And when it comes down to the bottom line, they tend to have lower bids. Mm-hmm. So we often will go with the smaller local companies pretty much for that reason. I mean, yeah. I kind of hate to say it, but Drexel is very often like, oh, we just go straight for the low bid without any, you know, and that's bit us before. So I try not to let that happen too much. But honestly, the small company that we've been doing installations lately, they're great. They, you know, they get back to me faster than anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I have
do you ever have any, like, major pushback or anything?
No. I mean, again, because they're the low bidders. So, mm-hmm. you know, everybody loves them.
So, but with the consolidation of all of these integrators in the industry, do you find that it's going to be harder and harder for you to maintain that relationship with the smaller companies?
I don't think so. I think there's going to be a place for them. I think if we had a more global presence, it would be more of an issue, or if we needed to do more stuff overseas, or even, you know, on a larger national scale, it would come into play. But, yeah, so far it's been the local guys are winning for me.
So on our end, it's the same kind of deal. The local folks have been very quick to respond, and only once or twice have we ever had, like, some folks where they looked at the contract clause and they said, "Oh, but what about this?" And I'm going, "If you guys are, there are certain things where we asked for, like, you know, DM certifications and HD-based T certifications." And I'll just keep it to this. When a company gripes about an HD-based T certification, it tends to put up a red flag for me. But in general, like, most of the times, we've developed a relationship enough where it's like, oh, yeah, no, guys, you need to have this, this, and this. I go, oh, all right, no problem. And they follow through, no qualms. And for them, it is, I'm not going to ever say that, like, you know, oh, William Patterson, no, we're, like, you know, a big powerhouse when it comes to, you know, buying AV or anything like that. No, believe me. Listen, right up to, like, you know, a couple towns up from me is, you know, where KPMG has a lot of their consolidated ops. Believe me, they will drop far more money in probably 1 week than I'll probably do in a year. So, of course, yeah, you know, the bigger fish are going to go after that, and the bigger integrators. But it's not to say that we don't matter. You know, if you look at the statistics and everything, the amount of money that gets poured into higher ed AV has been growing steadily year by year and everything. At the same time, if you also look at it, some of the schools are also going overseas, so it kind of goes
hand in
that one. That aside, Gina, the other thing I'm going to ask you from a manufacturer's perspective, by the way, if you're not familiar, Gina is the, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Gina, it's VP of Marketing and Communications?
Yep, and Corporate Communications.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there we go. Over at Atlas IED. So it's one of the, and how long have you been over there now?
9 months.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So if you're not familiar, Atlas does a wide range of products. As of late, I know their big push has been going into more of the communication, mass notification, things like that, a lot of odds and ends. But that aside, I'm going to ask, when it comes to some of the larger manufacturers and larger integrators and things like that, have you noticed that there's a trend of them kind of going, yeah, we want like a whole turnkey solution, or is it just one of those, you know, they're all the bigger fish are growing up, they're just kind of growing kind of deal?
So for sure, from a manufacturer standpoint, there's a number of challenges that come with integrators becoming global integrators. Mm-hmm. Very often schools, and you guys probably know this just from your dealings, schools that have remote locations, especially overseas, still want to have some sort of say in the standards that are going into the buildings over there, so that if there is any opportunity for remote monitoring and troubleshooting, you have that. Well, overseas, very often there are different certifications for your products that are necessary, mm-hmm. whether it's on the electrical certification side or, their UL isn't called UL. They have different requirements for life safety products and things like that. So it does pose a little bit of a challenge when you're trying to address a global integrator, but helping them to create standards. So we definitely have to work a little bit harder at getting the certifications globally that are required of our products to make sure that we can address those needs.
You don't put everything in a EU junction box and just call it close enough?
And have fun? No.
Yeah, that is one thing I have, like, you know, if you go overseas kind of thing, depending on the country, once again, there are some times where you look and you kind of become grateful of things. Mine was U.S. building code, mostly because in certain cases, the junction boxes, you know, tends to be a lot more standardized in the EU market. And for us, we tend to look at that and go, that's a two gang box. They're like, yeah, no, for us, it's just a single gang. Here you go. And God help you if we start getting into the metric versus imperial. But
but all of that absolutely plays a part, right? I mean, mm-hmm. their ceiling tiles are a different size. And so when we are talking about creating speakers that go into a 1x2 ceiling tile or a 2x2 ceiling tile, that doesn't work over there. So little things like that have to be re-engineered. And believe me, our engineers are fantastic at it. They know when they're during the product development phase, if we're going to address to market this as a global product, that they need to address these things. But heck yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you don't think about.
Yeah. It's one of those things of is globalization happening? Yes. In the sum up of it, it all just kind of depends on I view it as, how do you actually do the relationship management? Because, you know, once again, literally I'm probably about like maybe half an hour down the way from Diversified Systems. Mm-hmm. However, they have done some stuff at the school. And I'll just keep it to that. And we tend to stick with the local integrators for various reasons because of that. Anyways, but, you know, once again, it all depends on who you're comfortable with. If you're, say, you know, I'm going to say like NYU or something like that. If that's the case, it probably makes more sense that, you know, you have someone like Diversified or Whitlock or something like that. Why? Because they can get folks who are going to take care of, you know, your Abu Dhabi office or your or you know, your satellite campus in Doha or something like that. Because yes, they have folks who can go out there, or at least they have partnerships, or you know, the franchise or something like that. It's one of those. How big of a scale are you looking at? That's my little bit on that one. Moving on. The next article we have is from comes to us from actually through AV Nation ourselves, but it's about Audinate and how they released the Dante AV module, which if you look at it and if you've been watching how Dante has been kind of expanding and growing and everything like that, it's a bit of an interesting expansion. Specifically. Before it used to be, you have your Dante expansion bus, and you know most of your DSPs can handle that. No problem. Here you go. You know they've kind of a lot of them have kind of moved over from the proprietary expansion bus to Dante and everything. But now with this one, it's they're really starting to get into the realm of adding a as they put it AV over IP, and now this one also adds in telephony. So. It's one of those things, and I'll just, we'll go back and forth on the manufacturer and the end user here. Jason, I mean, I'll ask you, first and foremost, how much actual audio conferencing do you guys do? I'm sure Rob and his guys do a fair share and everything, but the bigger question is, are they going to look at that and go, uh-huh, and we already have our own hardware with this, or is it one of those they'll look and say, oh, that's interesting? So I'm just, getting the end user perspective on this one first.
This would definitely be a better question for Rob because I do very little video conferencing. But yeah, I would say, to me, it's kind of like, why hasn't this already happened? It seems like a no-brainer. It's like this. It's I don't feel like it's something to be bragging about right now. it's a thing that's out there already.
It's fine. It's one of those things where I look at it and this is just, we're going to throw spaghetti against the wall here and everything. I'm kind of curious as to whether or not this is going to be one of those things like down the line, whether or not you're going to have to do more, if this is going to be a new chipset or if this is just simply more software integration. My money says it's a new, it will probably eventually end up being a new chipset and everything. It'll be interesting. How this all kind of hodgepodges together. Cool. I would definitely say, no. It's think of it this way. If you have someone who's, who actually understands how Dante Domain Manager works and everything, and they're actually pretty good at DSP programming. Okay. It's another tool in the arsenal and everything. Yeah. The downside of it that I can see, and once again, this is on the end user side. I look at this as cool. We can do this. And Jason, I'll throw this to you. I'll ask you this because I look at it and go great. And then I realize, oh, the implementation of this. Say hypothetically, you could go and say, hey, we can actually put audio conferencing in just about every classroom that we have Dante in. My brain would go cool. The other part of my brain would then suddenly go and say, wait a minute, how do we make sure so that we, you don't get robocalls and everyone starts, kind of going, I'm getting random calls in the middle of my middle of my class. How do we get this to stop?
And that's the problem is, I'm not really the end user. The professor in the classroom is the end user. And is that person going to be able to, facilitate the whole Dante situation in the room? And if there is a problem, like you're saying, they're not going to necessarily be able to fix that on their own.
No, the other end I'll also say is this, and it's really more of one of those, how do you present it to, and this is the other thing I'm going to, it kind of comes up, is that's cool. How do you actually implement this?
Right.
And that, this is where I'll actually go with you on this. When, Jason, when you have a new product or a new say there's something where it's like, oh, look here, we actually have gone and made it where you can actually access the touch panel on the computer screen. Like some schools do this. At Rutgers, they have, they have a Python programmer who, they have a touch, they actually have a touch monitor and you can control the whole room off the PC and everything. Cool. The bigger question I have is then, you know, how do you actually get folks to adopt this and this and that? It's one of those, like, this is a new feature. Okay. So Jason, like, how often do you guys tend to update, you know, the faculty about new products, or is it more of you guys are more on like the maintenance end?
Yeah, we're more on the maintenance end, and I'm very hesitant to go too deep into new features because honestly, I find a lot of professors aren't interested. You know, we had a Samsung Flip demo here for a little while, and there was a professor in the classroom using the whiteboard, and after her class, I was like, "Hey, can I show you how to use this? You know, this Flip. It's very similar to the whiteboard. It's just as reactive. It's you know, it has a lot of extra features." And she just kind of looked at me. He's like, "I like using the whiteboard." And I'm just like, "Oh, okay." You know, like I can't force technology on people.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things of, once again, and by no means am I like throwing cold water on this or anything. It's some of the stuff is very cool. And I will admit up front, I think it's great. But it's how you, I think it's one of those things where it is a kind of a responsibility on us as far as how do we view this and how is this advantageous to us? Yeah. Because, you know what, perfect example is this. We actually just recently, we were dealing with some folks with our hospitality people and everything, and they had gotten a Solstice pod, which, you know, if you've played around with collaboration pods and everything, and collaboration hardware, collaboration software, what have you, it's very cool. Well, these guys had gone and just bought it, and the integrator never bothered to contact us about it. And so when they tried to hook everything up, they didn't bother to hook it up to our network. They just went and used the wireless, they just, you know, used the pod as its own wireless access point, and that's it. And everyone went, "Oh, this thing sucks." And I went, "Guys, you do realize, like, if you talk with us and work with us, like, we can get it put on the network. You can get all the wireless access, and you don't have to, you know, be isolated to just yourself." And they went, "Oh." And then they realized, like, "Wait a minute, I can do a presentation off my iPad?" I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "We can walk around and do this, and I can still check my email?" I'm like, "Yeah."
That's the point.
Ever. So it's, once again, this is one of those bits of, it's an interesting new feature with Dante. Do I think it's cool? Yes. Do I think it definitely needs a little bit more integration? And by that, I mean, you know, it'll be cool once I actually go and say, you know, you have the software dialer. Like, once you can have someone do that remotely, I can see folks, like, you know, with Rob's group going, "Oh yeah, cool. Oh, we can bring someone in via this. That's cool."
I guess I'm still trying to wrap my head around it a bit. And obviously manufacturers have to adopt it for it to even get to the point where you're going to be using it. But is it allowing for new features that will absolutely change the interface for the end user, for the professor, for the faculty, for the staff? Or is this just a piece of a puzzle that's going to make your life easier as a designer, installer, and maintainer?
I think it's on the installer end.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. So this might not even affect the feature benefit that your end user would see.
Yeah. Right. And that's the other thing too, Jane, is that, and I'll just ask this as a general question. As a manufacturer, when you guys see, like, you know, open standards like this and everything, do you guys go, "Okay, cool," or is it really more of, you tend to look at, like, for example, you know, if you look at Clear One or you look at BSS or a couple other ones, I know these are all like taboo forbidden words, but they all have their own expansion, kind of proprietary expansion bus. As a manufacturer, when you guys look at, like, is it more open standards or makes things easier, or is it more along the lines of, you know, it's easier if we just do our own proprietary stuff, and, "Oh, you want to do this too? Oh, well, here, we'll shift things over."
I don't think it's about ease. What we look at is, how does this fit into our long-term product development strategy and where we want to take the company? Mm-hmm. And so we develop those products and whether it's software or hardware, based on our strategy, whether it's, you know, the 3-year, 5-year, 10-year strategy, we are moving in a direction. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we make a decision about what we're going to use, what we're going to develop. Now, from a strategy standpoint, Atlas is very big on, right now, very big on non-proprietary, on kind of open architecture, mm-hmm. So that we do play nice with others, so that we are able to, we're full systems solution provider, right? We do audio communications from mm-hmm. endpoint to head end and everything in between. However, if you don't want to use an Atlas product for a specific part of that system, we're okay with that. And so we'll make it easier for you to be able to include our product and somebody else's product and have it speak nicely to each other. And mm-hmm. that's part of our strategy, part of our values, actually. As a company, we just revised our values. And one of the values that we have is making our customers' lives easier. Mm-hmm. So we want to be that company that allows somebody to say, oh gosh, that was so easy, thanks so much.
See, and that is one of those things where it is kind of a change. Like, if you look at certain manufacturers, and Jason, you know, you and I can both look at this on our end, without going into specific details, certain manufacturers do tend from time to time kind of go, okay, what will it take for you to make this all our playground? And they always try to make like a sweetheart deal and everything. But as I've said in the past, then, you know, Gina's probably heard me say this a billion times, so one more is not going to kill you. There are certain, like, every manufacturer has a product where you look and you go and say, oh yeah, that thing was bulletproof. That was like, that was awesome. And there's some other stuff where you look and you go, that needs to go back into the lab. That one, like, you know, that's true. Listen, it happens
to everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, as I say, believe me, every now and then there's been some stuff where I initially said, this is awesome. And then after actual implementation and use, I went, well, I was smoking crack.
Or theoretically, this was supposed to be awesome. Yeah. In practice, not so much.
Legendary. But like I said, it's good to see, though, from a manufacturer standpoint of, like, here, like, you know, we all do our things. We, you know, but being able to kind of be more open on the interoperability scale is a bit, I think, what's best for everyone.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's about all the time we have. Gina, where can the fine folks find you at?
I am on Twitter at Gina Sands, or mm-hmm. at Atlas_IED, or gina.sansevero@atlasied.com. Come and find me.
Fair enough. Jason, where can the fine folks find you at?
As always, drexel.edu, and I'm also back on Twitter at Jason, GAESON.
Oh, there you go. You can find me on LinkedIn, and that's about it. I try to tend to limit my Twitter following. Anyways, that has been it. Once again, this is EdTech, part of the AV Nation podcast family. We will see you guys all next week. Once again, this is EdTech.